Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri, inviting you to discover what research, projects and events are taking place at the University of Malta. I'm delighted to have with me in the studio today for University Matters, Mr. Robert Subban. Mr. Subban is not a newcomer to University Matters. He's been on the programme before. Today we're going to speak about a slightly different subject to our previous one. Just a very quick word about my guest. He's an assistant lecturer within the Department of Banking and Finance at this university, graduated with a Master of Advanced European Studies from the College of Europe in Bruges, and is currently reading for a PhD in Finance at the Manchester Business School at the University of Manchester. Welcome again, Mr. Subban. Today we're going to be talking about a sort of a comparison between Cypriot banks and the Maltese banking situation, and we'll know really what happened in Cyprus this year, and to ask the question really, could this happen in Malta? So we're going to hear about that. So perhaps we can start off by saying, you know, what did happen in Cyprus? We're asking the question, what did happen in Cyprus this year?
So earlier on, two banks had major problems in Cyprus, and they needed to get recapitalized. So they needed a huge injection of capital, and the state, the Cypriot government, was not able to provide those funds. So they needed roughly 10 billion euros. So they needed to call for the help of the IMF, the ECB, and the European governments to provide them with this 10 billion euro loan. The money was used mainly to recapitalize the two largest banks in Cyprus, and one of the conditions was that the second largest bank, which is Cyprus Popular Bank, had to be even closed down.
Really, what happens with these banks? We talk about Cyprus and they had to bailing them out and so on, but how do banks actually function with their money? How do they use their money? And eventually, what made this crisis happen?
One thing that we can try to understand is how banks do lose money. So there are mainly two ways. So they can lose money on their basic operations. So these are the normal operations that every one of us is familiar with, which is basically providing lending to businesses or retail clients to buy property, and so on. So obviously, if there are too many bad debts, in other words, people who don't repay these loans, the bank will lose money. And if this happens to a very large extent, the banks will have problem. So that's one way. The second way is that the banks usually invest some of the deposits by buying government debt, corporate debt. And sometimes the value of this debt is being reassessed continually on a continuous basis in the markets. And if that value goes down, the banks will have to deduct the value of these holdings, even though they might not have sold them. So they will still be on the books, but they have to do that. So whenever they publish their financial statements, they have to do that. So in the case of these Cypriot banks, basically what happened is they had invested huge amounts in Greece, on the one side to the Greek government by buying Greek government bonds, and to the Greek private sector, providing loans to businesses and consumers, and they made losses on both counts, especially after last year, in the spring of last year, when the Greek government made an agreement with the private sector, which was called the Private Sector Initiative, which basically, if you let's say held 100 euros of Greek government debt, you had to reduce that to around 23 euros.
So that was absorbed.
Yes. So that was a massive, what we call a haircut, a massive loss. So obviously, this impacted negatively on the balance sheets of these banks, and this is why they needed to be recapitalized.
They talk about the problem of the lending and bad loans. I, in my ignorance, I always thought that story must be much more complicated than that, because, I mean, is it possible banks actually were losing money with these loans? Did it have that great amount of impact on the banks, the fact that they were lending to, I don't know, house buyers or whatever?
So it's not only house buyers, it's mainly this lending to the Greek government and businesses in general, because banks always factor in that some amounts will default. But it's when that proportion is extremely high that banks have problem, because banks are businesses which are highly leveraged. In other words, one of the very important things in banks is the amount of capital that the banks have, because with this amount of capital, they will be able to absorb any eventual losses. And usually the amount of capital is fairly low compared to the size of their balance sheet. So, in fact, since the financial crisis, this is what regulators have been trying to do. They have tried to tighten the regulatory framework by requiring banks to have a higher amount of capital, because the crisis showed us that the amounts that they had was not enough when there are major crises. So this is what will Basel III be doing in a few years' time.
What about the Cypriot banks themselves when they found themselves in this situation? I mean, okay, you say there was a haircut, but they must have tried other ways of going beyond the problem.
Yes, I mean, obviously you have to report that in your balance sheet, so they were conscious that even before the private sector initiative actually took place, they knew that they would have to take some losses, because you can see on a daily basis the market value of your holdings. So the banks would know what was going on and what was coming. But the point is, it's very difficult. You need to raise capital, and these are huge amounts, and when the amounts are extremely huge, it's not easy to come up with a solution, because obviously outside investors knew that these banks had problems, and therefore they would be reluctant to inject any new capital.
And did these investors actually also not only not invest more, but did they actually take their holdings out? Were they able to do that, or is that not possible?
Yes, to a certain extent. When you start hearing these rumors, what will happen, usually the depositors will start to take their money out, because they might sense that they might end up losing part of their money, and therefore they so this tends to compound the problem, because you have at the origin a problem with your balance sheet, and then you have an additional problem, which is a liquidity problem. In other words, too many people are withdrawing money, and you are not attracting enough new deposits. But to a certain extent, this was remedied too, because the European Central Bank, they were providing some kind of lifeline by providing emergency liquidity loans. But at some point, they knew that they would have to withdraw that.
What about the fact that you're talking about these two main banks? What type of bank were they, these two main banks that caused the problem in Cyprus?
I mean, these were I would say traditional banks. They had the misfortune, so to speak, because Cyprus is they speak Greek, so they are very familiar with the Greek economy. So these banks, they tried to expand internationally, and obviously their most favored market, or the one with which they were most familiar, was Greece. So they had expanded, and they actually had branches there. So they were highly exposed to the Greek economy, and we all know what happened to Greece. So this is a bit misfortunate from that point of view.
But what about the rest of the Cypriot economy? I mean, why were these two banks so important within the general, you know, big picture of the Cypriot economy?
Because these were the two most important and largest banks in Cyprus. And obviously these provide loans to normal retail clients, to businesses. So obviously when these have problem, obviously they might then not continue providing loans to local consumers and so on, which will also tend to dampen down economic activity.
Vicious circle.
Yes, exactly.
Kind of idea. Just turning for a moment to Malta, because obviously you look at Cyprus and you see the comparisons. It's not a huge economy, one of the smaller economies, I would imagine, in the European Union. Obviously the place is bigger than Malta, but it's an island. There are certain similarities. So people started, even at the time, started saying, gosh, you know, Malta, perhaps you could outline maybe the differences or make a comparison between the bank situation within Cyprus and the banking situation here in Malta?
Yes, in fact, at that time there were a lot of articles which mainly were first written in UK papers and maybe a bit sensationalist type of articles, because obviously Malta was a very easy comparison. We are also an island in the middle of the Mediterranean. We also have a strong financial sector, and so on. So if we look at a bit, try to compare, the first thing that we have to look at is the size of the banking sector. So why does that matter? Because usually we look at a measure which is the amount of deposits to the GDP, in other words, the size of the economy, and the higher the ratio, well, it shows that the banking sector will be more important for the economy and can pinpoint a potential vulnerability. Why? Because ultimately, if the banking sector has a problem, it has to be bailed out by the government. And therefore, the higher the amount of deposits to GDP ratio, in other words, the higher the amount that the government will have eventually to spend in order to rescue the banking sector. So if we compare here, a lot of figures were mentioned, but in Malta is a bit different than Cyprus, in the sense that although we have around 25 banks which are licensed to operate here in Malta and which actually operate, we make a distinction between three main categories, which are what we call the core domestic banks. So these would be the banks which take deposits from locals and lend to local businesses and local retail clients. Then the second type would be the non-core domestic banks, which mainly only take deposits from depositors, but these are more like niche type of banks. They have maybe one agency, and typically they only you can only open an account if you put in a certain amount of money, and they don't offer like maybe check services and things like this. And these banks usually they either fund their parent bank in another country, or they invest the money typically in high yield corporate debt or sovereign debt. And then the third category, which is what we call the international banks, these have no link whatsoever with the local economy. In other words, they don't take deposits from locals and they don't lend to the local sector. So we have banks, for example, in this category, we have some of these Turkish banks. We have some of the Austrian banks which are like that as well. We have Deutsche Bank, for example, a big German bank. But most people here are not even aware that these banks exist.
In fact, when I was doing the reading in preparation for the interview, I was quite surprised in the articles that I was reading. They were mentioning these banks. I'd never heard of them in my life before. And then I realized that it's because they don't do any retail, they don't advertise or anything like that.
Yes, they don't take deposits. Most of these would be operations run by maybe 10 to 20 people. So it's very, very small operations and in fairly small offices.
But why are they important to the economy? They still account because these
handle huge amounts of money. So that's why they add up to the deposits to GDP ratio. They are still important because obviously they still provide funds to the local economy, in the sense of they have to rent offices, their employees will have to rent apartments, they employ an amount of local people, they pay their fees to the MFSA and so on. So they still provide some funds here to the local economy. But their involvement, the importance is that if these banks had a problem, most probably the Maltese government would not have to bail them out, because they would either be bailed out by their parent bank or their parent government.
So our government's not responsible for them in that
technically sense. They are responsible because they are licensed here, but in the case of a problem, most probably the government, if they are not bailed out, their impact on the other banks, local banks, would be minimal. And therefore, the temptation for the government not to bail them out will be stronger. And there again, because these banks would have maybe a very strong link with their home economy, therefore, either the parent bank or the home supervisor would have a huge incentive to bail them out. Mm-hmm.
I'm joined today in the Campus FM studios for University Matters by Mr. Robert Soban to talk about the Cypriot banking system and comparisons with Malta. Going back to Cyprus just for a moment, in the newspapers, I seem to remember reading that some of the problem was the international investment, but by not by banks, but by individuals in Cyprus, you know, the Russian bogey, you know, that one was reading about at the time. I mean, what was that all about?
Yes, I mean, one of the elements that we look at is also how are the banks being financed, being funded. So in our case, in Malta, most of the banks are funded by retail deposits. In other words, they don't depend on borrowing from the markets, which can sometimes shut down, like what happened during the financial crisis. And also, the retail deposits, most of them are from local people, not from non-residents, unlike the case of Cyprus, where they have a much larger amount of these deposits, which are from non-residents. And the problem with non-residents is that these can decide sometimes fairly quickly to withdraw their money and go somewhere else, whereas local depositors will be much more stable. And therefore, that's a feather in our cap, because that points that we are not really exposed from the funding part. In fact, throughout the crisis, the amount of deposits have continued to increase in our local banks, and also the amount of credit provided to the local economy. So that's a strong part from our side.
I know that you don't want to mention particular sums of money, because, you know, it's not easy to do that. But I was also quite amazed at the value of the deposits here in Malta. I mean, the Maltese are great savers by the looks of it. There seems to be an awful lot of deposit in our banks.
Yes. I mean, when you look at these amounts, they are huge. And that's why, given these amounts, we're talking of billions of euros. I mean, if we look at the amounts of the size of the balance sheet of a bank like Bank of Valletta or even HSBC, these are almost as high as the total amount of the debt that the government, Maltese government, has accumulated. So this is why whenever these have a problem, even if it involves a small percentage of their balance sheet, the sums are huge, so this is why when they have problems, then it's very complicated to solve, because finding 1 million euros is fairly easy, but finding, let's say, 300-400 million euros overnight is much more difficult.
So why are we saying that we don't have such a problem here, but that this is unlikely to happen in Malta? Perhaps we can go into that a little bit.
Yes. So first of all, as I mentioned earlier on, the size of our core domestic banks, and the ones which really matter, and the ones which most likely would have to be bailed out, that amount is far smaller in Malta compared to the case of Cyprus. Then the amount of debt that the Maltese government has accumulated is also lower than compared to Cyprus, and therefore that tells you that the government has some slack in borrowing money or providing more funds, so therefore he would be more able to bail out eventually any banks. And also, we mentioned the funding sources, which are much more stable in the case of Malta, and not only because they are retail deposits, but also retail deposits from locals. Then the asset quality of our banks is much higher. I mentioned earlier on that in the case of these Cypriot banks, they had invested heavily in the Greek economy, and they had to suffer all these write-downs on their assets. So in the case of the Maltese banks, they have very low exposure to these problem countries.
Where would they, in general terms, where would our banks, two main sort of banks, where would they be putting their money in a general
I mean, they would mainly invest into government debt, also to a certain extent into corporate debt, but these would be highly rated, what we call AAA rating. In fact, all this information is provided in the, if you look at the annual reports of the banks, they will provide you a very detailed description of these holdings. So how much of that money is invested into government debt, and then what is the quality of that government debt by rating, and so on. But also they have tended not to invest in these problem countries. So this is why they didn't really have to suffer any write-downs. And also our banks didn't invest in, they don't typically invest in those fancy products. For example, when there was the original crisis in 2008-2009, all the banks which had huge losses were those which had invested in these CDOs, collateral deposit debt obligations. Our banks didn't suffer any losses, and to a certain extent we didn't really have a problem during the financial crisis because they had not invested in such products. In fact, our banks continued to have to be profitable throughout the crisis period.
What's wrong with those products?
I mean,
why do they present a bit of a danger?
I mean, these products were proved to be at the origin of the crisis because mainly they had invested into these subprime mortgage loans, and then subsequently they had to take huge losses, and all the banks which had invested in these products had to take huge losses. So since our banks refrained from investing into these, therefore they didn't have to suffer all these losses.
What about the situation then at the present time? I mean, Cyprus, how is it managing to cope? Is it help from the European Union? How is it managing now?
So they had the European Union and ECB and the IMF, they provided this 10 billion euro loan. So they were able to recapitalize their banks and as I said, close. That was one of the conditions, closed the second largest bank, and they created what we call a bad bank. And then I think over time they will just try to resell the assets of that bank.
But people, ordinary investors like sort of you and me in Cyprus, did actually lose money, didn't they?
No.
Or not?
Some lost, but not all of them. So coming back as well, at the same time, they introduce some level of capital controls. In other words, they are restricting the ability of people to take the money out of the country. Because obviously, when you have a crisis, what happens is that a lot of people then they get afraid and they will tend to take their money out. So if you do that, as I mentioned earlier, you will create a liquidity problem for the whole banking system. So one way to avert that is to restrict the amount of money that you can take out from the country. So what happened is that obviously all those who had invested money in these banks, they lost some, except depositors up to 100,000. Presently there is this, all retail deposits are protected in all the EU countries up to the amount of 100,000. So the rationale why in the first place we created this deposit protection scheme was that this was goes back a long way, but before we had deposit protection schemes, we would have what we call bank runs. In other words, from time to time, if people believe that the bank didn't have enough money, they would all go all of a sudden to try to withdraw their money, and then even if the bank was solvent, in other words the banks had no problem, if you go, all the people go at the same time to withdraw their money, they will create a problem
create
for the
bank. Problem that wasn't there.
In fact, we saw this not so long ago in the UK with Northern Rock. So this was even before the crisis, when there were rumors that the bank had problems, and we saw this long queue line of people trying to withdraw their money. And in actual fact, when they did that, then the Bank of England had to nationalize the bank, take it over. So the idea of having a deposit protection scheme is to put the retail depositors' mind at rest that you don't really have to worry about the health of your bank, because if there is a problem, we will guarantee the deposits up to that amount. We don't do it for all depositors. In other words, if let's say a big corporation deposits 10 million euros, they are not protected for that amount of money. And the idea is that if you are a large investor, if you put in a lot of money, you can do your own due diligence. Mm-hmm. And even if you are not able to do it yourself, you can employ an accountant, a financial advisor, a lawyer to do that on your behalf. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we don't protect these type of investors. Mm-hmm. So those who had these higher amounts of money invested, well, they lost part of it. And in fact, in the case of the largest bank, they lost around 40% of their deposits.
And the situation in Malta now, we're saying that it doesn't have the potential for going down like Cyprus did. But moving forward, or how do we stand in general terms?
Well, obviously we don't have these problems because, first of all, our economy has kept on growing, although at a subdued pace, but so we didn't have a recession. Our banks continue to be profitable, and therefore this points out that our banking system is still healthy. As I said earlier on, the banks continue to take in larger amounts of deposits, so people are still confident in the banking system by increasing deposits. They are still lending to the economy. One potential point that keeps on being mentioned, for example, when the IMF comes here to do the regular Article 4 consultation visit, the last one, the last report was issued in May of this year, but also the Central Bank, they issue every year what we call the Financial Stability Report. They point out that the local banks have a certain exposure to the local property market. And usually what they mention is that if there had to be a huge decline in the prices, this could negatively affect the banks. But so far, maybe prices have gone down a bit, but it's also by a fairly small amount. Like if we look at Spain or even Ireland, their housing market, when prices went down by minus 50%. So obviously these are huge amounts, which we have not experienced here locally.
Well, with that, I'm afraid we'll have to leave the discussion. Thank you very, very much, Mr. Robert Subban, for coming on University Matters to talk about the banking system in Cyprus and the banking system in Malta. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to University Matters on Campus FM. If you would like to listen to this or any other program in the series, access the webcasts available on the Campus FM website. I do hope you will join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.